This season of the Rebel Influencer podcast is proudly sponsored by Gulshan Bano, founder of Strikeback Self-Defense, the world's largest self-defense organization. Gulshan is on a mission to empower women around the globe with life-saving self-defense skills that are easy to learn but make a profound impact. Under her leadership, Strikeback has become a global force, providing women with the tools to protect themselves from violence and threats. With a passion for safety, confidence, and resilience, Gulshan is changing the landscape for women and girls everywhere, helping us fight back and take control of our safety. Hello, and welcome to today's Rebel Influencer episode with me, Leona Burton, and the fantastic, skilled, world-renowned amazingness that is Natalie Trice. Hello, Natalie. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm super excited to be having this chat with you, PR legend.
Thank you, Leona. That is quite an introduction. I wasn't expecting that, so thank you very much. I'm thrilled to be here today.
Later, I take Venmo, PayPal, Cash App, whichever.
Nice. Okay.
So when I bring people onto Rebel Influencer, they are people who are moving and shaking in their space. They're doing something a little bit different. They're not conforming to the norm, but they're really turning up the noise. And you're that person in a very small pint-sized human form. You are the ultimate Rebel Influencer. Let's dig into what has been an insanely talented, wild ride of a career that you've had over the last, well, we won't give away your age.
It is nearly 30 years. I don't know how that happened, but yeah, it's crazy.
It happened somehow, and we don't need to ask any questions.
No, I don't know. It was kind of it was one of those things. I didn't set out to be a PR. I did an art history degree. And I stayed for an extra year at university, and I then went and taught English in Tokyo for a year because I still wasn't ready to go to work or really know what I wanted to do. And literally fell out of the plane in Heathrow. I was like, I need a job. And I got a job in an agency as a receptionist. And my telephone transferring skills were not really up to the job.
I can imagine that one. Yeah. You and I are both very similar that way. Yeah, that's not happening.
Not happening. So they shoved me on an account and Betty Crocker. The rest is, the rest is history. I was in charge of the red bowls and spoons in what was a pretty much ABFAB type basement office for a big global PR agency. And I had no idea what it was about or what I was doing.
And you were very young. You were very young when you landed that job, right?
I was 22 or 23. So,
in that environment, so young with all of those creatives and, you know, presuming in London.
It was in London. So it was a corner office. I can still see it now, near Gloucester Road tube station. I think having lived in Tokyo for a year, so you know what it's like living, you know, different cultures, and it was so different. I mean, I'd gone from a tiny town in the home counties to Leeds. I'd gone from Leeds to Tokyo, which was insane. And then I was like, okay, well, this is the next thing. And I don't know. I think it was before anyone even thought about things like imposter syndrome. We actually had an internet lesson when I started. That's how long ago it was.
This is how to dial up. We have to wait a few minutes for the connection. It's going to be a weird noise. Yeah. We'll be fine.
And I just kind of went along with it because it wasn't an art gallery. It was nothing to do with my degree. But I loved it. And I was kind of living my ABFAB life.
What was that like? Because obviously you're 20s. I mean, you know, when you're older, you look at 20-year-olds, you're like, you have no idea about life. Like, you have no idea about anything. But when you're 20, you feel like you know everything. What was that like? You almost grew up in that environment. That's amazing.
Yeah. And I never, I look back now. So that was fun. I think when, so a rebel. So I kind of did that got made redundant very quickly. That was interesting because that only happens to people's dads. And that was my first job. Yeah. So I was 23, made redundant clearing my desks. And I really loved that job. It was brilliant. And actually, one of my books I dedicated to my first boss, Althea, because she was like, look beyond the obvious. So that for me, that kind of 6-8 months that I had in that office was really formative in the way that I approach publicity. And then I quite quickly got pigeonholed into IT. So I became not the it girl, but the IT girl. Hewlett Packard, then headhunted across the building to another agency for Epson. I just remember someone saying to me, no, you'll never get a job in TV. I was desperate to work in TV. I think I'd had a breakup or something. And I was like, I want a job in TV. I want something glamorous. And they're like, no, you'll never get that job. And a job came up for Animal Planet. It was in PR week. I've still got the advert somewhere. I was like, I'm going to do this. Hundreds of people applied. And I got the job based on my press release.
Wow. Do you still have that press release?
Yeah.
Why would you not? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what did the press release say? Give us a little hint.
Yeah, I mean I can't take all the credit for it. So my stepfather helped, kind of, he was in PR and we were looking at it and it's like, how do you stand out? So if you've ever done a class with me, I'm like, you've got to stand out in an inbox. 17,000 emails one of my journalist friends had when she was editor of a weekly magazine. And we had to do a press release around a programme looking at the bush tucker trade. And my headline was, shall we have monkey for supper, darling?
Wow. That will grab your attention.
Yeah, that got me the job. Wow. And then I nearly lost my job because I wrote a press release about swingers and I didn't get the US to sign it off, but it got coverage.
Okay, so this is why you're the ultimate rebel. And you know, with PR, with socials, with marketing, you have got to be a little bit cheeky. In my opinion, the way that I've grown my business is by being a little bit cheeky and a little bit risky, and you never know which way it's going to go.
Right.
But people remember you. And that, for me, is important when it comes to creating a level of visibility and influence, because we need to open doors. If we're going to be influential, we need to be in the room. We need to be able to get into the room. We need to be able to hold space in the room. And we don't do that by blending into the walls.
We don't do it by blending in. And I think it's very, for me, it's kind of like, well, I always had that entrepreneurial spirit. So actually being in a corporate was great in terms of grounding. But could I do it now full time? Probably not, because I just see it in a slightly different way. And you have got to, you think about, okay, the media landscape is changing. Maybe there's less print, but print still is big and it's still coming through. We're just having a change. You've got more outlets, you've got more opportunities. So you've got digital, you've got podcasts, you've got all of these things. But how are you going to, especially if it's a journalist or a podcaster that doesn't know you? So we talk about contacts a lot in the press. And yes, we all have contacts, but you've got to have a story. I saw something on LinkedIn the other day and it was a PR guru in America. And he was like, contacts mean shit, because if your story is bad, they can't do it for you as a favor. If it's not a story, it's not real. So you do have to be creative. And I think quite often what the story is isn't what somebody thinks, because you've got that litmus test. I taught it last night. Who cares? So it's like, who cares? You've got a new website. No one cares. It's really blunt. And I'm not.
You,
right?
You care, but nobody else cares.
But they might care about why you've got a new website. So, for example, yesterday I saw EcoAge has gone under because of something happened within their business. So when they revamp it, which hopefully they do, that's the story behind why they've got a new website. But just a new website, if you're like me, you've got a new website every other week. It's not going to be groundbreaking news. But it's that idea. It might be interesting to us, like, I don't know, like our kids teething, but to the outside world, it's of no value.
Everybody's so busy. And you are bang on the money. There's that expectation that actually people give a shit.
They don't.
zero shifts. Like, they literally, there's, you know, we launch our business, we do a new thing, we expect people to come in the droves, we're like, you know, do you not know who I am? Nobody cares. Nobody cares. And actually, you know, working in television and being around a ton of influencers and models and all of that stuff, most people don't care enough to give a shit. So no. If you have that do you not know who I am attitude, whether that be virtually or physically, actually is an irrelevance. You know,
it's an absolute pain in the ass, to be honest with you, because if a client, you've done a good job, and I've done this before, creating a lot of media, securing a lot of coverage, and then it is literally like, tell them who I am. You're like, well, I've created a beast, and then it's time to walk away. So you do have that thing. And also, everyone else is too busy worrying about their stuff to worry about ours. So it is a fine art. And I think it's one of those communication skills that is often forgotten because people don't think they're ready or they're not big enough or all of those things. But actually, you're already doing it because you're doing your own PR on social media. So we're just taking it and amplifying it on someone else's platform. And I think that's what people forget.
And actually, you know, the more traditional PR versus socials now is huge. It's huge. And the two are intrinsically linked. I think for a long time, people, you know, thought of them as very separate things. But actually, it needs to be cohesive. It's got to be. It's not how it used to be of, oh, we'll put out a statement or we'll put out something. If your comms aren't consistent across the board, there is a massive disconnect. You only have to look at the Balenciaga scandal. That was just fucking horrendous. And it was just dealt with horrendously. I mean, you know, you're in PR and you're going to have much more experience on this than I have. But I was like, why isn't anybody saying anything, for the love of God? Like, you can't just make this go. It's not going to go away. Your socials are full of, you know, children's S&M gear. Like,
yeah, it's not going to go away. And I think it's the thing that people either try and bury it, or like you say, there's a disconnect. So if you say you are something, you present yourself to the media, whatever that is, the first thing they're going to do, the first thing anyone does now is Google. Are you who or what you say you are? That's no difference with a journalist. So you have got to be consistent. And therefore, if you're not consistent at the beginning of your business, which is when the PR should begin, how are you going to do it later on? Because it's not. I talked the other day about, I think, 12 MPs, knowing that they were essentially going to lose their place in the election, decided to register either as a PR agency or a management consultancy. And I'm like, would you want to be represented by them? No. Do they need representation themselves? Yes. Because it's not a backup. It's not one of those things you're just like cobbled together. Oh, yeah, I'm a PR now. I am old school, but it's kind of like not this, as I said, AbFab Bridget Jones kind of messing around. It's so powerful if you do it the right way.
Who do you think does it really, really well?
You see, I like the Beckhams because I think that they have, one, they never bitch. You will never see whatever scandal comes out. I think there was a new book a couple of weeks ago. There was a big like expose in You magazine or something. They never respond. So no response is a response. Rebecca Lewis, all of those things.
Rebecca Lewis. Yeah, it was just like a whole. And even if you, did you watch the documentary?
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant. That whole.
It was fantastic because it was like. It wasn't denied the affair, but it wasn't played into either, and it wasn't made a massive. And I have always respected them as a couple, as business owners, as a PR machine that they are. But they just do it so well. It's kind of this kind of very just calm.
I'm sure behind the scenes, it's absolutely magnetic.
Yeah.
Right? You can imagine, but it is and you know, people listening will be like, they're rubbish. Well, actually, I would really love to have the Beckhams' money and success and fame. You know, they've done it. And I think that's important, that there'll always be haters. You know, that's the thing. But I think they do it well because they're not tit for tat. It's not he said, she said. You'll never see that at all. So whatever goes on behind closed doors, you can't say that they're masters of their own destiny. And they're cute. So
they are cute.
You know,
they're
kids. I think it's just, it's done well. I think they're clever.
Yeah, me too. Who's their PR? I mean,
absolutely. I don't know. I looked one day, I was like, I couldn't find it, but it must, you know, they do it well and they don't bitch. And this is the whole thing, especially kind of in the online space. We don't want to be, I've done crisis management once involving a butcher and a machine at 9 o'clock at night on a Friday. That was not fun. QuickSave was a client. It was hideous. But that's high pressured. But they don't always get into the situation when they need crisis comms because they don't enter the squabbles. What's the point? And we have that, and we have that footprint. And again, it's being mindful of what you put out into the world. Because when I say to people, it used to be off the record. There is no such thing as off the record. There really isn't. Once it's said, it's out in the world. And it's the same with the online space. Someone can take... someone can take a WhatsApp message or they can take something that you've written in the past and it very quickly can get out of hand. So you do have to be mindful. Do you want it to be out there?
Massively. But that, I mean, the reality is being famous in this day and age must be a fucking nightmare because actually things can be taken completely out of context very quickly, and private conversations between friends for the right amount of money can be leaked. Now, if you saw the conversations between any of me and my friends taking the piss out of each other or, you know, chit-chatting as women do, if somebody wanted to have a skew on that in the wrong way, you could probably find one. And that's scary because, yes, there are lots of things that need to be exposed and there are fucking hideous people out there and... You only have to look at the recent BBC scandal to, again, see that there are a whole heap of shit that's happening. Mm-hmm. But the reality is if you dug into anybody's life, you're going to find arguments with their partner or, you know, they fell out with their best friend over something or they've got too drunk on a Friday night and snogged the wrong person or whatever it is. So, you know, this whole kind of living for this fame that a lot of people, I don't think people realise just what they're getting into. And one of the things for me has always been this balancing act between really having a desire to grow a business that's impactful and understanding that that impact raises your profile versus becoming famous for the sake of fame. And we've had a conversation before, like at the moment I don't do any press, and that's purely strategic. Well, I just don't want it. I can't be bothered. It's not the right time for me. Mm-hmm. But I've done a lot of press in the past. But I would say 99% of it has always had really good feedback. There's always going to be somebody that says something about anything.
Always.
But people buy into this whole, will you just give us a statement about Kate's chemotherapy, or can you just say something on the fact that, you know, so-and-so's fell out of a husband? And a lot of influencers or people that are trying to build their credibility are having conversations about things that are nothing to do with their business and then finding themselves just becoming, you know, more well-known because they've done a story about nothing of anything. And I know how easy that is to become. Listen, I did a story on the fact I didn't have sex on my wedding night many, 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 many years ago, maybe 10, 11 years ago. It was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And I think it was in the Mirror and they paid me like 60 quid to do it or something. I mean, look, I've done it. I get it. I mean, if you search, you're going to find it at some point. And my kids are like, Mum, why did you ever do this article? It's hideous. Because I'm a Googled person, right? But yeah. I also understand that it's not helpful for my business. And for me, PR has got to be, okay, what is it going to bring me as a business owner? And what is the message going to be? And that's what I love about you. You're very much, we're not just talking press for the sake of being in, anything specific, you know, anything that is not specific to the desired outcome. You are very, this is part and parcel of building brand versus let's just get your name in anything. Mm-hmm. And that's why I have so much respect for you, because that is your focus.
Yeah, and I think it's very, I mean, I've done it to an extent. You know the story. I had a son with hip dysplasia. My career went on hold. It was very difficult and challenging. And I channeled my energy into raising awareness. Now, would I do that now? Maybe not, because he's traceable and I don't want him to be a poster boy for dodgy hips. And I certainly had my fair share of backlash. You've only done that. You've pimped out your son to sell books. Well, if you know how much you make from writing a book, it's bugger all.
100 books is like ridiculous.
It's nothing, but what the book does is help you to grow. And so I say to people, and I watch this happen, you know, I've watched people sell their stories that's nothing to do with their business, and they've been trolled and it's got out of control and it's horrible, and I would not suggest it, because I'm like, what do you want to be known for? You don't want to be known for, you know, hanging out your dirty washing in public. That's not what we want. If you want to be known as having impact on women and business, that's what you talk about when you get into the press. And, you know, it's, and I'll say to people, is that going to help? Is being in the Daily Star going to help you become a reputable? So, you know, there will be situations, and we also forget when it comes to publicity, it's not cold, hard cash. You're not paying for an advert in Reds and however much that is. You can be in lots of places, but being in lots of places takes time, money, energy. You're not paying to get into the press, but you have to have things in place, like someone like me or a consultant or my book or whatever it is. Is it going to take you a step further to be knowing for what you are? So I did such a good job on hip dysplasia. I became a global award-winning hip expert. I'm not an orthopedic surgeon. I was a mum on a mission to make a difference, because why wouldn't you? Then I have to undo that, because every time someone's budgie or granny gets bad hip, I get a message, which is okay, but I don't want to do that anymore. And so you can see the power it has. And when it's consistent, so you put a spanner in the works by then talking about, you know, what you have for Christmas dinner. No one cares. No one cares about that. So it's very, yeah, it's a very tricky one. And kind of being, like you say, people can find it. So you want to use the press to amplify what you're already saying. So if you're already talking about money mindset on your socials, talk about it in the press. Talk about it in Female. Talk about it with Karen Brady's piece in Fabulous. Amplify what you're already saying, but it has got to make sense.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. So you've had this whirlwind career in PR. You know, you did television shows. You went on to do Cartoon Network, I believe. Is that correct?
Yep. So I did Cartoon Network and Cartoon Network, TCM, CNN, all around the world. Crazy. It was a lot of fun. And I think I was 29. I managed 15 PR agencies around the world at one point, and would go on tour and launch channels all over the world. That I think I didn't realize what a big job that was for my age. I was just like, I'll go along with this. Fine. It's fun. It was a crazy office. We had a great time. Bob Geldof used to come and talk at our parties, and it was brilliant. In hindsight, that was...
He only came to talk at your parties. I'm sure you had a great time at your parties. I mean, Central London.
Yeah. Apparently. Maybe that's not one for me to talk about. But yes, it's not like I can't say I had an amazing... Yeah, it was an amazing career.
Amazing. Yeah. So you walked away temporarily from your career, had a little rest from your career. When you had your boys,
it was more of a, it wasn't a rest. It was, as you know, it's having a child with additional needs, and you don't expect that. And it was like, what do I do? I've got a busy brain. I'm not made for John Lewis and Pilates as much as I tried, and I really despise soft play. So it was like, I need to keep my brain keep my brain busy and keep my career going. And I think about this often with women because, yes, so now I'm at a point where 17 and 15, I'm aware they're going to be maybe leaving home. And what do you then do? So had I not kept working and doing things and teaching and writing books and the things I've done, you would be start. And I had that foresight when I was 30 and pregnant with Eddie of like, if you stop now and do nothing, you're never going to get back into it. It'll be very difficult. Certainly, you know, the world has changed, remote working. COVID certainly brought certain good things with it. And I actually really enjoyed it. I think I enjoyed COVID too much. Turned me into a hermit.
I think that's hard. I genuinely do think that it did for a lot of people. I saw something yesterday on socials. It's like 4 years since the world stood still. And I thought the world is still not the way it was before COVID. No. We are still not back to living fully. And a lot of my friends are, and my peers, but a lot of people are still not living to full capacity.
And it's hard. I think it's really, so, you know, like I went to London, I hadn't been for a year. I mean, I did used to be that full on party girl, even to a degree after I had my sons. And I hadn't been to London for a year and I got COVID. And it's like, right, okay, I got COVID, but I've booked to go again. You have to, and I think it's that you can't, on reflection, could I go back and live the life I lived when I was at Cartoon Network? I'm 50. I've got teenage sons. I'm married. No, I could not.
It was 5 minutes, but I'm sure at some point it wears off and you're like, okay, I'm over this now.
I would be in the back of an alley and sleeping under my desk again. So it's kind of like that. But then how do you then, and I think a lot of women, and I know you see this in MIB, how do you re-pick up that career when you are high achieving, when you are ambitious, when things have happened and you're like, you can't go back because you're different, but you want what you had.
You are different, but you also have a ton of experience. You have all of that experience and all of that knowledge. You're older, you're wiser, you are more widely worldly educated, whatever the words are.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you have all of that lived experience and all of that work experience to bring to the table. And now you are consulting at a high, in my opinion, this is the next part of your career.
This is
You see it,
I think. So when we talk about rebels, I think this is very easy. It's very easy for women, not that we're bashing men, but to kind of think, okay, well, this is it. And for me, it's not it. It's like, that was it then, but I can't kind of go home in a taxi at 4 o'clock and forget my address because I've had too many glasses of champagne. And you don't want to not carry on. And I think the work you do is so important because you're kind of empowering women to go, okay, we're picking up again. You didn't stop altogether. None of us stopped.
That's the thing, is like, just because temporarily you pause in that area of your life, shit, you're doing 7,000 other jobs that you never even realized you'd have to do ever. So it's so important. And I was talking to an Olympian yesterday, and she was saying at the end of her career, at the end of her Olympian career, she was like, okay, now what? Like, I feel like I've lost my identity. I'm a mom. I'm not an Olympian anymore. Of course, she's still an Olympian, but she's not training and doing all of the Commonwealth stuff and all of this stuff. She was like, you know, you had this kind of a bit of a, what the fuck now am I doing?
It's weird. I certainly found a couple of years ago when Lucas, we kind of got the all clear pretty much with his hips. And I had a bit of a like crisis. I was like, I've been a hospital mum for, you know, I was like verging on Munchausen. Sometimes I was like, oh my God, I can't do this anymore because it's not fair on him. But I had a good agenda at the beginning that I wanted not to be, you know, I'd sit on wards alone at midnight crying because my son was broken and there were other kids crying. Where'd you get the support? Someone who is in Australia online. So that was the premise. And now I've got my train of thought. But you learn all those skills, you learn all those things, and then you come back and think, what new things can you create? And what new, not legacy, but I think someone phrased it very well. This is like the next chance, the next step, the second spring, all of those things. And we bring that and then we can filter that down to the next generation. But it's certainly not that you've done it and there's nothing else to come. And I think it's really easy to get into that mindset of that was the best. Now there's nothing. Well, my grandma's 91, so that I could have another 41 years. That's a whole other lifetime.
Exactly. I mean, it's mass. It is huge, isn't it? It's huge.
Yeah.
And I think so many. I've seen so many women, especially women, right, down tools and go, well, that's it. You know.
Yeah.
I've lost my identity. My career isn't what it used to be. You know, I'm just going to settle for this, whatever this is, and that's it. I'm going to die. And I'm like, girl, get out.
And it's the That's what I was saying. The identity. I was like, okay, so that was my identity for a long time, possibly. In hindsight, I wore it as a bit of a badge, and they were like, okay, he's okay. They will, you know, lots of people might need a hip. Who knows what's going to happen? But I like had all my hair chopped off, got a sports car. I was like, had this total crisis. And then you come back into the room and you're like, well, that was a bit fucking stupid, wasn't it?
Thank God for hair extensions. That's all I can say.
I had to just grow it again and get rid of the blonde. But it is that thing. If you build up so much of your identity around your work. And I think for me, that was it. It was like, yes, it was an amazing career. Yes, I worked for great brands. Yes, I lived all around the world. And then all of a sudden, you've got this person that you're responsible for and they don't want to sleep. And then you've got one that's a bit broken and you just think you have no control. And I think that's something that a health visitor said to me. They're like, you could control everything, Natalie. Your PA, your career, when you went to the gym, what you ate, all of those things. The baby comes along, you can't control a baby. And I think letting that go again and then having to pick up the control again and go, right, I need to get my career and my path back on track. So you're kind of like dropping something for a while, but it's always in the back of the mind. At some point, you're going to pick it up again. And I think for me, that was always the thing of like, I'm not done. I'm not done.
You're not done. You're just ready for rock and roll. Let's talk about your current stuff, because your current stuff's freaking awesome. What are you doing at the moment? Tell everybody.
Okay, so I do two things. One thing, which I guess is quite new for the UK, is fractional senior PR support. So think of me like your fixer. PR agencies, in-house teams, maybe they can't retain the right staff, they can't hire the right staff, they need fixing their press offices. Because I've worked agencies in-house, my own consultancy, a wide range of businesses, and I'm not just, as I said, it's not just the PR. I can see how the pieces fit together. I can see how internal comms are not talking to external comms, how HR isn't involved, how you're not getting the buy-in. So I kind of go in and fix and coach and mentor so that they can run their teams and ultimately build their businesses, because they're performing. You've got less sickness, you've got less like freelancers going in, all of those things. And I teach. So my career starts as a teacher in Tokyo. I love teaching. I teach women to get themselves into the press, but I also teach them to believe they belong in the press. You know, I say Taylor Swift was not born famous. She wasn't papped when she came out of hospital in the Moses basket. And I think there is that big visibility issue of being seen. You know, and I've had it before. You're always everywhere. We see you everywhere. Well, if I wasn't a good PR person, what am I meant to do? I want people to know who I am so that I can help them to build their businesses. If I'm annoying, then so be it. Because,
then something is wrong. Right,
exactly.
You won't see my face at least 17 times a day.
Exactly. Why wouldn't you? If you're going to represent other people, it's like I was talking about the MPs. Should they be representing, given the state of the nation? Probably not. But if I'm going to be, you know, consulting and offering other people advice on how to be more visible, I have to be visible myself. So I think that's one thing that I do, be that through my books. But yeah, I love to teach. I love, like we've seen this week, someone actually, she got her whole self a radio show, not just an interview. And I had this message and seriously, it was like, oh my God, I can't believe this. Nastia, I can't believe this. It was like a minute and a half. How's the same message?
She was very excited. She was very
radio show every week. You're like, and she talks about, you know, domestic abuse. She's got a big platform now. Had she not believed that she deserved to be in the press, it wouldn't have happened. It's not easy, and you're vulnerable, but I can teach you. You can do it, but I think sometimes it's like someone giving you a push and going, you can do this. Here's the permission, in a way, go and do it, because you're already sharing. Let's face it, a lot of us share a lot of our life online in some way, and it can be snapped, even if we've got a private Facebook page. Nothing is secret.
I say this to people all the time. They're like, but I keep my profile private. I'm like, babe.
It means nothing. I messed up a couple of weeks ago and someone snapped an email I sent. And I said, why? You know, I'm meant to do it. But life, things were in the way. I wasn't, you know, we all make mistakes. But my thing is, if I can make myself, turn myself into a blinking orthopaedic surgeon using the power of PR, you can do this for whatever you are actually qualified in. We can do things.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I want to be a cross between Call Her Daddy podcast, which is being hilarious, and Oprah. Can that happen?
Yes, but every time you offer a piece of external comms, you've got that in your mind. What do I have on my wall? My Chanel life. Will every piece of communication in my life take me towards where I want to be? And that's the thing.
And I completely agree. And actually, you know, that's a massive thing that I talk about on socials. You know, people are making random posts about random shit that has nothing to do with anything. I'm like, why? Stop wasting your time. Go and talk to your friend.
Put it in your stories. Put it in those things. But actually, I say to people, what do you want to be known for? That one thing. We can do lots of things. We're multi-talented, creative people. Go for the one thing and be consistent. She says, I don't always do that, but it is that thing. Will it take you closer to that goal? Yes. That's what you have to think about.
Absolutely. Before you go, where can people find you? Because we need to stalk you. We need to buy your books and we need to work
on the books. Yes. There's not very many Natalie Trices in the world. I think there might be a badminton player in Wales. So
have you been secretly training to be a badminton player?
No. No, I can assure you that is nothing that I would consider at all. NatalieTrice.co.uk, Natalie Trice on all my socials, Natalie Trice on Amazon. So if you happen to have to deal with hip dysplasia, Cast Life is my first book. PR School is my second book. How to Successfully Relocate is my third book. And I'm 70,000 words through Life After Choose, which is my first novel.
Yes! Amazing. Natalie, you are a legend.
Thank you so much.
You work with the Beckhams and then me next to help me become the next Oprah.
Yes.
I'm excited. I'm excited for everything. Natalie, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much, Leo.
This season of the Rebel Influencer podcast is proudly sponsored by Gorsham Banu, founder of Strikeback Self-Defense, the world's largest women's self-defense organization. If you're looking to make more money and help women and girls stay safe, reach out to Gully. She has many an opportunity for you to do just that.